Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:17 p.m. and that is Central Time. And today is August 15th. And I thought we'd kick off today with China, and there was a lot of news. The first, of course, is that they cut interest rates, and that is in direct response to the crisis that's evolving within the infrastructure and property sectors, and the degree of leverage within those two sectors, I think, is totally underappreciated. And the estimates that the property sector alone represents a third of the Chinese economy, that basically I think, understates just how much capital has been locked up within property. So I think the Chinese, they definitely want to try and unwind the property bubble. And relative to incomes, all the main cities like Beijing, Shanghai, Shenzhen, Guangzhou, they all have the highest property prices in the world. And we've already seen that there's been plenty of protests around living standards, costs of living. And I think the Communist Party have made the determination that bringing down property prices is probably more conducive to them holding on to power than further inflating the bubbles. So they're going to do what's necessary to ensure that there's an orderly market, but so far there's nothing in the way of support for further enhancing the price. So the renminbi looks like it could break lower, and I think it's particularly important to highlight that not only is it falling against the US dollar, but when we look at the renminbi versus the Japanese yen, then we get some further intelligence. Japan's economy surprised on the upside with stronger GDP in here today. Let me just put this, sorry, the other way around. And what we're going to see here is that the yen is now trading at around 20. There have been a couple of times when it has exceeded this level in the past, but now we have Japan attempting to devalue their currency and or devalue their way into growth and inflation. And now you also have China cutting interest rates and potentially willing to devalue their currency. And I think when we start thinking about, well, what's the most likely course of action for South Korea, they're not going to want to lose competitiveness relative to either Japan or China. So the Korean won is also at a potential area of resistance relative to the Japanese yen. So we're looking at the potential that there could be some kind of competitive devaluation among these big economic powerhouses within the Asian region. And of course, that could then easily support the dollar. But of course, if we have a stronger dollar in an environment where Chinese economic growth is under pressure, well, then that is going to take a toll on several of the industrial resources. Copper prices today were down about 6 cents, continuing to pull back from the $4 area and at a new closing low. So this continues to look like a type 2 top formation with a period of right-hand extension, which is now rolling over. And I think this is most particularly important because the consensus has been that there is going to be a phenomenally large jump in demand for resources and that we're on the dawn of a secular bull market. I've been leery of reaching that conclusion because I've been to several conferences, most particularly the ones in Saudi Arabia, where the hype around that idea has been mind-boggling. And there's been no consideration of what the bear case is, most particularly that there's this assumption that Chinese demand growth was going to continue indefinitely. And that just does not appear to be the case. Now, of course, the counter argument, of course, is that if commodity prices do come down, then that's going to be clearly beneficial for consumers. And most particularly, then, if countries want to go off and build infrastructure, then they'll have an easier time of it. And if we're going to see a great investment cycle in new infrastructure in the Western world, or the decarbonization themes that might actually have some money behind them, well, then it's going to be a lot easier if commodity prices do come down. So, in fact, you may get the result without the intervening big bull market in commodities, or you might have to wait a while for it. I suspect that we're going to see a very attractive buying opportunity in some of these commodities at some stage over the next 6 to 9 months, but before that, there could be a significant decline. And then we can also just look at what's happening with the oil price. Brent crude today was down about $1.30, now off the lows. So coming back to test the sequence of higher reaction lows and pausing in the region of the peaks from back in January through April. So wouldn't be that surprising if we see some consolidation. It has room in which to consolidate because it has broken the downtrend and it is above the 200-day moving average. As long as that remains the case, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. But it certainly has to hold the breakout. And then, of course, there is the bigger question around whether OPEC has the wherewithal to continue to limit supply sufficiently to cater to the potential that Chinese growth is going to surprise lower. Now, Chinese demand for oil has been really quite robust, even as the property sector has rolled over. And of course, that is as a direct response to the fact that the vast majority of oil is used in transportation. And the vast majority of industrial resources are used in building. So it's obvious then that the industrial resources are going to be more susceptible. Now, one thing that I think is rather relevant here is that when we look at the BlackRock World Mining Trust, the fund premium is down to only, or excuse me, it's a discount to NAV, is only down to about 3%. Now, that's really quite narrow, and at important lows in the past, we've seen really rather more significant discounts. And then, if we look at more back history, well, then we're going to see that there have been occasions where the trust has traded at a premium. But let's just look at the last 5 years. We can very clearly see that it has spent a good deal of time trading at a very substantial discount. And a discount of 15% wasn't at all unusual only quite recently. And now there's the potential that it could move to a premium. So when we then look at the performance of the big miners here, it's back in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. It was down in a dynamic manner today, and with Chinese growth rolling over, that could have a knock-on effect. So then let's also look at so how some of those commodity exporters are performing. And the ASX 200 was in positive territory today, and it's continuing to hold here in the region of the upper side of its range. Then let's think about the materials sector. And then we have a very similar pattern of behavior to that BlackRock World Mining Trust. But of course, this is in Australian dollars. If we look at it on a US dollar basis, then you get the clear comparison. So what that also helps to highlight is that it is the Australian dollar in nominal terms has been able to support the index in nominal terms, but it is continuing to roll over as commodity prices start to deteriorate. And then let's also just pay some consideration to Canada, and obviously another big commodity exporter, and the TSX was in negative territory as well in here today. And this is also a massive reaction against the prevailing trend a year ago, and then a very orderly process of consolidation subsequently. But then let's also just redenominate it, and then the type 2 top formation with right-hand extension becomes even more obvious. Now, when we then think about what are the leading companies within the index, well, Brookfield is one of those. and it has been the big Canadian success story over the last several years. Having broken on the upside, it has begun to come back down. And obviously, not a Canadian company, but Blackstone has also been unwinding its short-term overbought condition. It really does need to hold the region of the 200-day moving average if the benefit of the doubt is to be given to the upside. And of course, then in Brazil, the two big weightings within the Bovespa are Arvale and Petrobras, with iron ore prices and nickel under pressure and oil prices starting to come back down. Then in US dollar terms, the Bovespa is pulling back from the region of the upper side of its range. And it's a similar story in local currency terms as well. Now, let's then look at what's happening in the technology sector. So the Nasdaq was down 160 points in here today. And pretty much unwinding the pop on the upside that we saw yesterday, although not quite. And then if we think about the leading movers, well, there weren't very many on the upside today. And then there were some that were down in really quite a dynamic manner, but most particularly Tesla and then ASML Holdings. So let's just zoom in on ASML, and we'll look at the Dutch listing as the primary. And it has come back down into the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, there has been a succession of higher reaction lows since the end of last year, and on each occasion it has come into the region of the 200-day moving average, it has bounced. So if it's going to continue bouncing, well then that should start to happen tomorrow. And if it breaks lower, then we would have to prepare ourselves for a deeper process of consolidation, or a much lengthier ranging phase between about 400 and 700. And of course, what that also helps to highlight is that the big growth phase in selling equipment for making semiconductors was between 2019 and 2021, and the share went up from, I guess, 100 and change to almost 800 in that time. Well, definitely, there's a lot of money flowing into building new fabs. But the big question, I think, and we will have an answer to that, is how much of that is already in the price. The market cap of the company is up to 240 billion euro, and the PE is around 31. And yes, I definitely understand that there are lots of sales in the pipeline, but when you've got a price to sales ratio of 9, it would at least assume that a lot of that has already been priced in. And then when we look at the semiconductors index, well, it got all the way back up to test the peak near 4,000, and now it's starting to come back down. Now, we had a big move on the upside yesterday from Nvidia, and then it's starting to ebb a little in here today. One of the biggest challenges with the market right now is that because we've had such a big move on the upside, then options are really quite expensive. Now, even for something that is going to expire in 3 days, you're paying $6 if you're buying puts. If you're buying calls, you're paying even more. So in fact, the puts are cheaper. But if you want any kind of duration, well, then you're paying a significant premium. And I think that's an inhibiting factor in shorting some of these companies. But they're very overextended, and there is a clear potential for a full unwinding of the overbought condition relative to the 200-day moving average. I do not believe that Nvidia is going to be able to sustain this outperformance indefinitely. And of course, if it comes back down through 400, I think there's going to be a lot of stops are triggered. And then we also have Tesla in negative territory today, continuing to unwind its overbought condition. The number of court cases against the company continues to increase, and it seems that Elon Musk's fate is tied almost in lockstep with that of Donald Trump. And certainly both have a large number of cases being lodged against them, which are a headwind to both of their ambitions. Now, when we then think about the S&P 500, it did move to a new reaction low in here today, and it closed below the 50-day moving average. So I think that there is clear potential here that we are moving into a period of at least mean reversion, and I think that is it has to be the base case. We've continued to see that the yield curve is continuing to moderate the inversion. And it's now at 73, or I guess almost 74 basis points to the downside. It has not quite yet broken this sequence of lower rally highs, but it is beginning to trend higher. I think what we saw today in China was a good example that when central banks eventually do cut interest rates, it's because they're worried about growth. And there's been this tendency to think that the stock market is inevitably going to perform well because there'll be a soft landing. And because there's a soft landing, then when interest rates come down, that's going to be a clear vote of confidence that a soft landing has been achieved. But that's generally not what happens. Usually, the most likely scenario is that when they do cut rates, that it coincides with some of the deepest selling pressure because it helps to ram home the point that there is a problem. So that's obviously something that I think investors need to start to pay attention to. And at the very minimum, we are due some consolidation. Now, when there's continued demand for dollars, then that is putting downward pressure on gold. And it's right in the region of the 200-day moving average and the lows from back in late June. And now the bigger question is it going to hold support here and rebound tomorrow? And or are we going to see a deeper process of consolidation? Having had the failed upside break above the 2000 level in the middle of the year, it could easily come back down and test the $1,800 level. And if this is just a consolidation prior to an imminent breakout, well, then it's going to find support right here. I'm watching this rather closely. And today was also a negative day for gold shares. They were down in a fairly dynamic manner and breaking to a new reaction low. The downward bias continues in terms of this sequence of lower rally highs or a downward bias overall. And now the bigger question is at what point are we going to start to see support coming in? There hasn't been a great deal of interest in supporting some of these mining companies, despite the fact that they're all mostly profitable at a gold price of $1,900. But of course, then you have energy prices, labor costs that have pressured a large number of these companies. When we look at the clear underperformance of a company like Fresnillo, where it has come from 1,000p to about 526 in just the course of this year. That's in direct response to lower grades, higher cost of production, less production, more, and then of course having to pay higher wages. So there's a lot of difficulties in getting everything firing in the right direction within some of these mining companies, and those that are failing are certainly being punished. When, of course, the trend changes, then there's going to be a lot of bargain hunting. So, certainly, some of the worst performers are worth paying attention to, but it is in this environment where the clear outperformers are the ones that I think investors will be paying most particular attention to, because in an environment where there's an uncertain price trend, then if a company is going on the upside, then there has to be a good reason for that. So I'll be spending a couple of at least some time this evening looking at where the clear outperformers are within the mining sector. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.